You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. I've never felt so conflicted about reviewing a movie for people to listen to, because Parasite, by one of my favorite Korean directors, my favorite directors, Bong Joon-ho, is the type of film I just want to tell everyone, don't listen to anything except for people who say, just go fucking see it. It's one of the best movies of the year. It's not like it's a movie that's filled with like twists and constant surprises. It's not a movie that I'm like, oh, I'm so worried about spoiling a specific thing in the story for you. It's just go fucking see it and let it just be a film you know nothing about.
It does really go to a different place at like the midway point, which is not like super out of left field, but it's just like the way it moves there is so great. I almost feel like we kind of have to be like at the beginning of our score and just be like, all right, now let's discuss it for the rest of you who want to hear people talk about it.
Well, unfortunately, like I said, at this point, we're reviewing this. It's already come out in theaters, assuming you live in a town with anything vaguely resembling a theater that plays into your art.
A draft house since we named a theater after it.
Yeah. They played this at Fantastic Fest where Ben and I got to see it, and they actually had a ceremony because Bong Joon-ho was there and named the theater the Bong Joon-ho Theater, which we were all like, so awesome. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
this is one of those guys who I'm just like, even his weakest movie is still like, that was a really cool idea, well executed.
It won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, with the first Korean film to receive the award ever, and the first film to ever win with a unanimous vote since Blue is the Warmest Color.
Yeah. I mean, in case you haven't guessed, this movie has been highly acclaimed. I mean, people have been talking about it for some time, at least ever since Cannes, and people have been really good about not spoiling it. And you know, we've had this conversation. I'm not a big spoiler phobe, but like you, I would encourage people to, by all means, listen to us, you know, because that's what we're here to
do. Yeah, that's what we're here for.
We wouldn't dream of spoiling this, and more than most films, this really benefits from coming in with as little knowledge as possible.
So, all that being said, that's the end of our review. Just kidding.
So, we're just going to drink now.
Anyway, it was fine. No. This is a movie that I think that even if you're the sort of person that normally goes, I don't know, subtitled foreign language films, not usually my thing. They tend to be a little dry. This is that film that is going to transcend
this
that for
you.
This
movie moves very quickly. I mean, if you've seen Snowpiercer, you know this guy understands how to move a story. And yes, the movie's a bit more action-packed than this one might be. And I can tell you, I went into this one completely blind because I did want to. I'm like, this is the type of movie that everybody's talking about. The less I know about it, the less I have to be impacted by people talking about it. And honestly, like, if we haven't already sung his praise enough, I honestly feel like this should be, if not will be, one of those rare ones that, despite being foreign language, is actually nominated for Best Picture this year.
And if you're not familiar with Bong Joon-ho, he did Snowpiercer, he did The Host, Mother, Memories of Murder, Okja, and this is so unquestionably the best film he's ever made.
And most approachable, I think, as well.
Oh, most certainly.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly got a lot of contemporary themes. I mean, just the name alone will kind of give you a hint as to what you're going to expect, which is, we start off with the family, the Kim family, and they're led by Bong Ho's stalwart lead.
I don't have the cast up. Song Kang-ho,
Who is in almost every one of his films.
It's so fantastic.
He's one of the best working actors in Korea right now, if not the world. This guy just manages to sell every character, no matter what he's doing. Here he's the patriarch of a family that consists of a wife, a teenage daughter, and a teenage son.
Yeah,
they're all college age.
They're kind of grifters,
but grifters. They're not bad people. We see when we meet them, they're first assembling pizza boxes for extra money. They're all unemployed. You get the sense of they just find whatever work they can.
This is basically half of America right now.
Right. and the father even talks about, it's almost a running joke when he talks about all the jobs he's had and, you know, got fired from or, you know, got laid off.
They're basically living in like the ultimate basement apartment where it's like, your windows are street level in a dirty alley. Good job.
And then, like, you know, what happens is they're all running a little bit of a scam here. But when the son is approached by an old buddy, he says, hey, I'm leaving for, I'm studying abroad, but I've been tutoring this young girl in English, and I recommended you for the job. And the guy's like, well, I don't really have the qualifications. I don't even have the degree. And he's like, don't worry about it. Just tell them you have a degree. Besides, your sister's really good with Photoshop. She can probably whip up some fake-looking diploma. And before you know it, he applies with the Park family, who is another four-family unit. You've got the mother, the father, and two much younger children. And
who are very wealthy.
They're very wealthy. And it's, again, it's the things that he does as a director that don't... He doesn't telegraph this, but it's clear what's happening. When we see the Kim family, they're living below street level, and they have to walk because they don't have a car. And as they approach this palatial, you know, modernist architectural wonder that they live in, you know, amongst the hills. I mean, the geography the geography alone tells you the two different statuses these families.
It's literally like the difference between where I live and people in Westlake Hills here in Austin.
And I kind of, if you lived in a basement,
I kind of want to say almost like just stopping here is like enough. If you just want to hear the basis of this movie, that should be all you ever know going into this.
So, like, and I agree with you. So, for you guys who are like, and I hope that most of you feel this way, like, stop. Just go see it. Go buy your tickets if it's available near you and go see it. Now, for the rest of you who are like, I don't care about spoilers, fine, we'll give the rest of the fucking review.
No, I don't, well, it's not, I don't think a review is a spoiler, but we or do plot. Have to
well, I mean,
plot.
Going past this point is where even my expectations at the start of the movie immediately even got more sidetracked, because from here, the brother goes, hey, they have this crazy son. I think you could probably tell him that you, I told him that you know about painting, but I didn't tell him you're my sister.
His sister, yeah.
Go ahead and create this character. And I got to say, the woman who plays the sister, Park So-dam, is so fantastic in this movie. Yeah. Because one, even addresses like, you are crazy manipulative. It's like, yes, she is so good, both like as the fan in the family unit where she's like super casual, then she's like the most like militaristic, like school mom who's like, no, we're doing it my way.
So you learn quickly on that Parasite applies to really this scenario where like it starts with the one kid who's coming in lying about who he is to have this high paying job with his family, and then brings his sister in. And by a certain point early on in the film, his whole family is working assumed like names and jobs. And
each one introduces the next family. One. He's like, oh, hey, I heard you need a driver. Oh, I hear you need a housekeeper. And the Parks are, the father is a, seems to be a software developer of some kind, very wealthy. The mother's kind of anxiety prone, but she lives at home with
her
kids.
She's kind of the Prozac laden, you know, rich house mom.
She's kind of a soccer mom. The kids have art classes and they have garden parties and they do all kinds. They're studying English, etc. They're kind of the perfect family. And here's where Bong Ho does such a good job with this, because it would be so easy to portray the Kims as a bunch of selfish, manipulative grifters, and it would equally be easy to portray the Parks as these sort of oblivious, obscenely wealthy, obnoxious people who deserve to be ripped off. And what he does is he brings a humanity to both sets of families. Both have their own motives, both have their own desires, and both are just trying to survive in this world. Obviously, the Park family is doing significantly better than the Kims. And so from the Kim's perspective, it's like, it's perfectly fine. They're rich. They deserve, they never quite say it, but it's like, look, they're gullible,
well,
you know, and we're providing a
service. No, they do say it. The guy who brings them in is like, the mom is like kind of stupid.
This should be easy. One of my favorite lines though, from the Kim's, where it's kind of like balancing that out too, though, is there's a scene where it's like all of them together and addressing this, and just like, they go, you know, the mom is really nice. Like, yeah. It's like, well, you know, it's because she's rich and she's never had to have a bad day.
Yeah.
So she's really nice to everyone, which sadly, not every rich person is actually really nice.
As being like an iron. Money is an iron that irons out all of the wrinkles.
They do show off where, okay, but they are still occasionally super selfish people because they're rich. But they also show off this family's also definitely criminal grifters throughout periods of it too. And I love the balance of that. This movie's such about the classism without also saying either class is right or either class
is
wrong. And
there's a weird homeostasis that's there for a while between this where it's like, look, regardless of this family being deceptive, the poor family being deceptive, they're not really hurting this other family on the whole. I mean, at the worst, there's like a point where they're just like, hey, the whole family's going out of town, so we're all going to gather in their house and just fucking party and take advantage of it. You know, we'll clean it up and they'll never even notice the difference because they're rich people.
It's
what
basically
would they know?
Risky business. It's like, oh, we'll have a party before my parents.
And I'm not going to say what it is, but the movie, and you know, if you know Bong Joon-ho films, you know eventually a big fucking shoe is going to drop. And that big shoe drops and you're like, what is happening
now? Yeah, the second half just goes, holy shit, this is insane. Because the first half is kind of like some of his more tame Korean films that don't always, you know, not everybody has seen.
Yeah, it's like comedy.
Yes, this is like comedy. This is, you know, slice of life. It's, you know, showing classism, but it's a slice of life. The second half goes in some of his other films, where it gets more genre, it gets more weird. It
gets
and
more
dark.
Yeah.
Oh my god, and the ways it does gets progressively weirder and darker, and I kind of adore it.
Yeah, no, I mean, the one thing that you need to really understand going into this, and it's true if you see any of Bong Joon-ho's films, he is a master of tone. This is a guy who can switch gears so quickly. At some point, it feels like this sort of light. It's easy to imagine a Hollywood remake of this where everybody's really nice and it's kind of funny. And, you know, yeah, they're ripping each other off, but, you know, the other family's venal and deserve to be
ripped off.
Isn't
that kind of overboard?
He gives them both their humanity, but also slides so effortlessly between comedy and dark horror and social commentary. At one moment, it almost becomes a farce where people are hiding and, you know, running through doors. And you think, oh, well, this is the sort of farcical moment until a character reveals something that another character hears, the other character not knowing that they're listening. And the Kims get to a sense of what the Parks really think of the people that they hire. And it's really heartbreaking because even though this family is totally ripping them off, they kind of wanted to be liked by them. Excuse me. They kind of wanted to be liked by them.
They kind of liked them.
And they kind of liked them back. And even the Parks are like, oh, no, we like them. But, you know, come on. You know, there's a line you don't cross.
That's what I'm saying. It's like the family kind of like each other. And it's not till there's this point where the classism thing that is very, obviously very overt, takes a surprising dark turn from another character that everything is thrown into utter chaos with this homeostasis. And that's where the film goes from a really gorgeously shot and acted film that is like comedy to a very like hold your stomach out of tension to watch, like, oh my God, how's this going to play out? Because the movie somehow manages to make you like every character in it, where you're rooting for both sides.
And here's where where Ho does such a great job. And you have to forgive me because I'm talking quickly and sometimes I say Bong Joon-ho and sometimes I say Joon Bong-ho. But you know who I'm talking about.
Bongy. Director. He likes to be called Bongy.
I just call him Bong.
It's honestly, I will say, the American thing is at least you're getting the right names. Just the order definitely is not our normal standard.
This is one of my favorite directors. And so it is my goal to just get his name right because he deserves that.
All right. Well, you got it. So do it.
So
what is it? Bongy.
Like I said, he's a master of tone, and the way he switches between comedy, between horror, between social commentary. And one of the things that really grabbed me about this film is, as I said earlier, he gives them all their humanity, but one of the darker aspects of the Kim family, even though he... Again, dancing around spoilers. The thing about them is, when you start to think about it, they're all really smart. They don't need to be in this situation they're in. You get a sense that, well, are these people just really lazy grifters? They don't seem to have any ambitions other than to make money and survive. And you think with all the talents that the kids show, they easily could have done something better than just living this horrible venal life. And you think, well, okay, they're our protagonists for now. But when you assume that they finally meet a character that you would think they would have some kind of, like, solidarity with, and I think one of the sort of unsettling ideas of this movie is that, yes, every society has an underclass, but at some point, a member of an underclass is going to meet somebody who's in an even worse situation than them. And rather than showing sympathy or solidarity, they become just as bad as everybody else. Mm. And to me, that was one of the more startling images, because the Kims aren't saints by any stretch of the imagination. They're sort of lovable scoundrels.
Yeah.
Until you realize that, oh, there's somebody who's actually beneath us. And how that plays out, I won't say. But it's just one of those things where it's a movie without any bad guys. And it's without any good guys either. And, you know, you have to ask yourself where that class structure
is. It's a portrait of society.
Yeah.
It really is. And one that fools you into thinking it's a different type of movie than it actually is for a while. Because the point is to like all of them. To see the humanity in all of these
without stacking
people.
The deck.
And I'll even say that one
class.
Where it's the people, quote unquote, below them. It's not even that they treat them poorly. It's more they're just like, what the fuck is happening? And things spiral out of control so severely because it throws off their rhythm and their scam, and they don't know what else to do about it.
Yeah.
And then they realize, shit, now we're caught in our bullshit.
But there's also an idea that you can't rise in society unless you step on top of somebody else.
Can I say that one of the most attractive things about this film is the cinematography?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Hong Kyung-kyo, which is just so constantly startling. I mean, it's startling. Like, think of the best shot films you've ever seen that had scenes that you were like, wow, that's gorgeous. And like, and I can see just by the nature of the way it's shot, how this is sort of a metaphor for the bigger story. This film does those shots over and over and over again. There's a shot during like a flood sequence as the characters are going back down into the flooded part of the city with this mass of wires crossing over like a spider web that just took my breath away. It was just astonishing.
Well, that and the dichotomy of their settings, which is primarily the Kim's home and the Park's home, is just, it does feel like a different world. And you know it's the same city, but it's just like, Jesus, it really feels like that idea of, you know, when you see like a sci-fi, it was like, oh, these are the people that live up in the clouds and the city in the sky. It's like, no, pretty much that's what's happening. They go up a hill, they have a gorgeous forest, and they have, you know, private driveways and this yard that, despite being a yard off like a city home, is probably bigger than like any house I had in a small town type of thing.
I mean, it, in that respect, it kind of reminded me of like Kurosawa's High and Low.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Where you have these two classes and one very envious person is looking up at this house that's sort of taunting him, this house on a hill, which overlooks, you know, this sort of slummed, also kind of flooded area. And, you know, it's a strong visual metaphor where you see the two members of society, one of which is literally above them.
Well, let's go to final thoughts. Ben, get us started.
Yeah, this movie, as I said, I went into it with basically no knowledge besides Bong Joon-ho, I'm sorry.
You son of a bitch. Look, you racist son of a bitch.
Look, there's two fantastically famous Korean directors with two American
at least
ears,
two.
At least.
At
no,
least
I'm saying two American ears with fairly similar names.
All
right. With between those two. But Bong Joon-ho here
I was kidding, for the record. I don't know.
Although you insist
I don't
on
think
calling Keith David Keith, and I will never forgive you for that.
There is an actual David Keith who's also an actor.
I know.
Record,
so. I want to see those guys in the same movie together just for the poster.
The They
Keith
Live remake.
David.
Okay. But, you know, I will say it's like he's a director that I've always liked. I still enjoy Snowpiercer, though I will say as time progressed, I'm kind of like, it's not his fault because what it's based on is kind of a very simple concept that is also about classism.
Yeah.
I think this is, if you're an American who only knows him from Snowpiercer, this is the movie that basically like Snowpiercer kind of wanted to be talking about classism.
Yeah, Snowpiercer is kind of like the rough draft for this better film.
Yes. Like Snowpiercer's
the comic book version
of
this movie.
Snowpiercer's a lot more violent and stuff. there's, I will still say, like, to tease you with it, there is still violence in this movie. And the way it shows up is like, damn, that hurts. Because again, Marco and Chris has been saying, and I as well, is like, you like every one of these characters.
Yeah.
You like both of these families in the greater scheme of things. And you realize that when the violence comes in, it's because everything is fucked. Not just the classism, but just like the way they have to adapt to it is fucked up. Honestly, I walked out of this movie just going, that is possibly the best thing I saw at Fantastic Fest, a film festival that every year, if you listen to our, you know, reviews from that and our posts from that, we adore every movie that we see there. Almost every movie, at least.
Not, we don't adore every movie.
Okay, we adore a large...
We adore at least 7 or 8 movies
for seeing 25 movies a year, or 25 movies a year at that festival, minimum, the amount that we love from that festival is saying a lot. This year, I can say this definitely stood out. This is one of those movies that I think everyone should see, especially the... It's not the last act, but like the last like 3 scenes of this movie are so gorgeous. And so heartbreakingly gorgeous in the way that they are. Like, I can't elaborate on that without spoiling things. But it's just like, it takes the scenes you know, and it flips them in different directions than you expected. And it almost gets your hopes up at a moment. And they're just like... And then that's just the dream we all live. It's like, oh, fuck you.
Yeah.
It had to happen, and you're right. But Jesus, fuck this movie. Every actor's great, honestly. If this does not get nominated for just a actual Best Picture, it's going to be, honestly, a travesty because, we see most movies each year. You know, some of us will miss some Christie's, most of them. I will honestly say this is still, for me, probably the best I've seen this year. There's still plenty more to come in the next 2 months, but this is a must-see. I'm going to give it 10 out of 10 peach fevers.
Fair. Marco.
Yeah. Man, I can't reiterate much more than what you guys have already said without spoiling further, so I'll dial it back. I will say that I do think that it does suffer from having one too many endings. I think it has a pronounced coda that's a multi-part coda each, which is a little bit less realistic than the one before, but by the end, he's no longer dealing with any form of realism. This is definitely a statement film. And my goodness, it is about as good a film as I'm likely to see this year. I was surprised. I was moved. I was shocked. I was entertained, which is the other thing that gets left out of this conversation, is that even though Bong Joon-ho often makes some of his films can be very hard to sit through, he's never anything less than entertaining.
Not hard to sit through in a boring way.
Yeah, he's never. You might be disturbed. You might be shocked. You might be kind of confused.
He challenges
you. You're never bored through one of his films, and that's, again, comes down to his mastery of tone, because that guy can switch from comedy to tragedy to horror to social commentary to sci-fi to, you know, any genre or tone, he can just switch onto on a dime. I'm just constantly amazed by this guy's mastery of his craft, and he really is one of the best directors working today. I'm going to give this 9.5 out of 10 teepees in the backyard.
So I feel like I've got to start by quoting the New York Times with the writer who said, the film is the kind of smart, generous, aesthetically energized movie that obliterates the tired distinctions between art films and popcorn movies, which is to say, honestly, the Koreans, more than any other country in the world, are making the smartest genre films in the world.
Yeah.
Like, they make these genre films where they're decidedly genre films, and showing there's no reason that high art doesn't have to be non-genre film.
Exactly.
Like, and they're making movies like this that just prove it unquestionably. Bong Joon-ho has been doing it throughout his whole career.
I'll bet you Martin Scorsese thinks this is cinema.
I bet you he does.
He'll say, no, that's cinema.
Yeah, no, he has never had a problem with genre. He just has a problem with superheroes, I guess. I don't know.
He has a problem with a genre.
Yeah.
And I will say, is Bong Joon-ho, I mentioned earlier by accident, is kind of the same way. He does a lot more horror, darker genre, and heavier genre, but like, he's another bit of that proof, which is like, I can't watch one of those movies either and not say you don't get the human element of what makes a really solid film and a solid genre film work. And
like, it doesn't matter what the genre is, like, I feel like anybody who's ever spent any time reading science fiction since it started understands that sometimes the most important things you're going to get out of art are things that are doing it in a speculative, sort of not real world sort of way.
It basically magnifies it.
Yeah, exactly. It finds a way to talk about the human condition in a way that a film that's set in a very super realistic way cannot do by its magnification of saying, like, we're taking this metaphorically and saying things that I think is the very definition of art, an abstract art, maybe, and maybe it's the film version of abstract art. It's like it directly connects to these ideas in a way that if we just spelled them out for you, wouldn't be the same thing.
No, it definitely ends with a metaphor, and he doesn't let you forget it. The sun's constantly going around, going, it's like a metaphor. He knows he's dealing in metaphor.
This is just a gorgeous film. Yeah. It's also a very distressing film, but it's not as distressing as, say, like I Saw the Devil, which is another really, truly fantastic Korean movie.
Oh,
but that
God.
One is not for amateurs. That one is really
dark
and fucked
up. That is
up
there as one of my favorite horror movies of all time. And that's not because it's like direct horror. It's more just like, this is gory and troubling, and you will never come out of this movie feeling
and
clean.
Smart and like a well, incredibly well directed. And this is all of those things except not gory.
Yeah.
It's disturbing. It's a little gory, but it's not like Seven or something.
Right.
It's not like that.
It's not like as brutally gory as you might think when somebody says gory, but there is certainly
blood.
A reasonable amount of blood.
Yes. Eventually. I kind of say, of every movie I've seen this year, this is kind of the must-see.
Yeah.
And Ben, you mentioned earlier, like, it will really be a shame if this isn't one of those films that doesn't make it past the just-nominated-for-foreign-language film to should-be-nominated for Best Film.
And the Palme d'Or definitely gives it that leg up.
Yeah, that kudos that it certainly deserves. It's kind of a masterpiece. It's certainly Bong Joon-ho's best film, who's had nothing but great films in his career. I'm going to give this... 10 out of 10 uncomfortably exploding toilets.
Oh, God, that was...
Yeah, you forgot,
to
right?
Those comfortably exploding
toilets.
Oh,
wait, you've never had, like, a warm, fuzzy thing with your toilet exploding?